Serve It Cold, Episode 2. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
Hello, Shirley. This is Helen. I missed you at church this morning. Are you feeling all right? Mm-hmm. Well, dear, I'm just glad you are all right. I told you to go easy on that Lee Sister lemon juice. Honey, I'm here to tell you that we ain't as young as we used to be. Speaking of which, by any chance you talked to your sister today? Well, good. I'm glad I got to your first, girl. I tell you, I about busted a gusset racing home before that Willie Connors beat me to the phone. You will simply not believe what happened at the mini-mart this morning. No. Now, that's just silly. Shirley, quit wasting time guessing and just let me tell you. And don't you go answering that call waiting beep either. It'll just be Wilhelmina trying to horn in on my gossip. Okay, I'm getting to it if you just give me a chance. This morning, at the mini-mart, a young woman walked up to that Johnny Speed and accused him of stealing her marijuana right in front of 40 witnesses and God, and you won't believe who that girl was. No, surely it was Narlene Moore. Yes, our Narlene. And that's not all, Shirley. Well, she missed Sunday school and church today, too. That's right. 16 years perfect attendance. I hold that brother of hers totally to blame, Shirley. Goat Johnson, Shirley, you know that. Mm-hmm, they had different daddies. Goat's probably more than 15 years older than Narlene. Coming back to town after being such a big football star and so respected, and first thing he does is open a bar. One thing Crosstown's got plenty of, you ask me, it's bars. Well, I know he's got manners and he's given to some worthwhile charities, but he came pretty tough. He was mixed up in the fracas this morning. You'll never guess what he did. No, he didn't. Surely, when a person says you'll never guess something, it does not mean you get to take 5 or 6 off-the-wall guesses. Yes, that was off the wall. Now listen to me. After Narlene accuses Johnny of stealing her drugs, she runs out of there, not to be seen or heard from again. But Goat shows up and threatens to kill Johnny if he doesn't give him Narlene's drugs. I'm telling you, he did. There must have been 50 people who saw him do it. And right after that, the police showed up and searched the entire premises. Yeah, that's right. He is a sweet man. But you know that Johnny ain't no saint. True. He's been real good to Gojo. Lets him have off whenever to make his classes. Lord knows Johnny Speed is the only father figure that child ever had. No, I know I'm not, and I'm not throwing any stones, but you and that sister of yours have a blind eye where that white man is concerned. I'm not saying that Johnny is not a good man, but he does have a history. And I'll tell you one thing. If he's fooling with those drugs again, Vera Hill will see to it that he'll be out looking for his next wife before he knows it. Now, I don't know how many times he's been married, and neither do you, Shirley Pope. Now, as I was saying, what? Shirley? I told you not to answer that damn beep.
I picked the Saturday audio tape from its place in the neatly ordered rack and stripped several feet of tape from it before throwing the cartridge into the trash can. Tape player ate the tape last night, Gojo. We'll have to find time to give the machine a good cleaning before we start taping again. By the way, don't throw the office garbage out tonight. We'll get to it later in the week. He just shook his head and gave me the bemused smile he so often seemed to have on his face when he was around me. I grabbed my binoculars and headed for the door. I'm going birding on the Trace for a couple of hours. If Vera calls, I'm sorry. If Gigi calls, I quit, made you manager. If B&E show back up, don't give Eaton any Sumatra unless he admits he likes it. If Narlene shows back up, I would suggest you duck and cover. The Leaf to Pearl Trace is one of Catherine's best assets. A bike, pedestrian, and horse trail, it follows the route of the old Illinois Central Gulf Railroad for more than 50 miles, from the bank of the Leaf River in Catherine to the Atwood Water Park on the Pearl in Monticello. It's a cool, green strip of sanity that runs right through the chaos of unplanned growth and neglected older neighborhoods that make up the city. 5 minutes after I left the store, I was watching a wood thrush forage along the Trace's shady verge with all my worries behind me. Well, almost all. By this time, I realized exactly who stole Narlene's pot, and I had a good idea of where to find it. In those days, Homer Blue was a bebop wannabe. He lifted stuff from the store every time he came in. He had his own puppy gang that hung out in the shady edges of the parking lot, imitating every strut, hand flash, and slouch of Bebop's crew. Homer was impatiently waiting for his first term of imprisonment at the Columbia Reformatory, like an apprentice pipe fitter waits for his union card. He was also waiting for his 10th birthday. The kid who had turned in the purse was called Crunch. He absolutely loved Nestle Crunch bars. You just never saw him without a Crunch bar in his hands. He was a good kid. Sometimes Gojo would let him sweep up. His pay was, of course, Crunch bars. I just couldn't see Crunch stealing the pot. But when I policed the lot after my chat with the police, I had picked up 5 Crunch bar wrappers under Homer Blue's shade tree. It all made sense then. Homer was going into the drug business. After the wood thrush and I parted company, I moved off the trail and into thick brush. These 30 acres of hardwoods and blackberry thickets, the railroad woods, had been the haunt of neighborhood children for more than 100 years. My brothers and I had taken our turn at staging Chinaberry Wars, digging forts into the clay banks, and hanging out with the hobos jungled up in the grove of cherry bark oaks along the tracks. I knew that Homer's gang had to have its own fort in the woods. I moved slowly, birding along the way. I caught sight of a worm-eating warbler, already migrating south in early September. I was trying to get a better look at the bird when I realized that the air was redolent with ganja. It was easy to follow my nose toward the smoke's source. I hadn't gone 30 yards before I heard the giggling. The boys had hacked out a small clearing in a blackberry thicket and furnished their hideout with stolen lawn furniture. There were 6 of them, laughing their heads off and literally rolling around on the ground. Crunch was right in the middle of them, holding a crude spliff in one hand and his Crunch bar in the other. I came at them loud and hard, scattering kids right and left into the blackberry vines. I emerged from the other side with a 1-gallon Ziploc, fat with pot in one hand, and Crunch dangling by his belt from my other hand. It took Crunch a couple of minutes to calm down enough to breathe evenly. He stood silently with huge tears rolling down his face. I took him by the shoulders and made him look me in the eyes. "Crunch, if I ever see you hanging around Homer again, I promise you that I'll tell your mother what you did today. And after I do, I'm going to tell Gojo." At my second threat, the tears stopped flowing and he blenched. I knew that I had taken him from mere fear to shame. I almost apologized to the kid. Instead, I let go of him and watched him run for home. I walked back into the thicket and sat back in one of Homer's lawn chairs to examine the spoils of battle. Although marijuana had never been my drug of choice, and it had been almost 20 years since I had hung around with anyone dealing in bulk, I wasn't totally unfamiliar with the product. But this stuff was something else altogether. Clearly, that baggie held the most amazing pot I'd ever seen. In fact, if I couldn't still smell the heavy smoke in the clearing, I wouldn't have even recognized it as marijuana. The huge, fluffy buds were rich green, striped with deep purple. It was laced with red threads of spent pistils and glittered with crystals of THC. I had read Michael Pollan's book, The Botany of Desire, and found his accounts of Sea of Green marijuana farming fascinating. I remembered that when Pollan talked about prices, there were lots of zeros involved. Maybe it was just remembering the book, or maybe it was breathing the lingering smoke, but I could feel a tangible paranoia creeping up my spine. I suddenly realized how dangerous it was for me to be lounging around in the woods holding a 0.5 pound of super pot. 20 minutes later, I was walking into the front door of Rockin' the Cradle, an old warehouse that had already been turned into a roadhouse in the mid-20s when the great Cooney Vaughn and his piano held court here. It was here that Vaughn single-handedly took New Orleans jazz, Delta blues, and Piney Woods gospel and shaped them into something new and unique. Rock and roll. At least, that is what us true believers will attest to. It was also the place where Vaughn first played with Ewer Roy and Blind Roosevelt Graves. In 1936, the three named themselves the Mississippi Juke Band, walked 4 blocks east to the Palace Music Store on Pine Street, and recorded the first rock and roll record in history. The first attempt at restoration came in the mid-70s, and since that time, the slouching building had eaten up the dreams of 4 different groups of investors. Now Goat was giving it another try. I walked through the open front door and followed the sounds of hammering into the shadows of the cavernous building. I found Goat, balancing precariously on a straight chair, hammering at a nail that was just out of his reach. From my vantage, the nail looked pretty safe, but the wall was catching a whirl of hurt. When he paused to catch his breath, I walked into his line of vision.
Johnny C., grab a brew.
Gesturing toward an open ice chest full of beer, I fished a Henry Weinhard's Hefeweizen out of the icy water. Are you going to be selling Henry's?
No, I can't buy it in Mississippi yet. I really got to like wheat beers when I was with Oakland. Bring me one of those. There's going to be some good beer here, though. I think we're going to have maybe 6 brands on tap, plus another 20 in the bottle.
We both pulled chairs up to a table and sat back, savoring the foamy beer. Goat, you think that people will actually come to Crosstown again to party?
Well, if they don't, I'm going to have to come work for you at the mini-mart. So, Johnny C., have you solved the case of Gnarly and the Missing Pot?
I've made progress. First, I need to ask you some questions. Maybe just one question. What were you going to say to me back at the store, Goat?
What I was going to say is probably irrelevant now. I figured that Gnarly was holding for my club manager, Sonny Richard. But I've had a serious talk with Sonny, and I'm satisfied that he has nothing to do with it.
Richard, is he Cajun?
Close. He's from the Point in Biloxi. Sonny was working at Jimmy Buffett's place in the French Quarter when I was playing in New Orleans. He managed a little place for me in San Francisco. He's a good manager, very good. But Sonny can be a little out there. And Narlene has been hanging out with him lately. But like I said, I had a serious talk with him. You were right. Narlene is afraid of somebody, but she's clammed up. She still thinks you have the pot.
Goat, at the moment, Narlene is right about that. I slid one of Bebop's boxes across the table. I found this box in my parking lot today. Here, have an Altoid. I think you'll find them curiously strong. It says so right on the box. When Goat opened the tin, the bud popped out like a jack-in-the-box, and his eyes widened in surprise.
Holy shit!
Judge by your reaction that you didn't give the pot to your sister. He gave me a hard look.
Of course not. I told you I didn't give her anything.
And I told you that I didn't steal it. And you said that you believed me, but here it is. Do you still think I didn't steal it from Narlene? He glared at me a while longer, then laughed.
Well, Johnny C., I'd have to say you got bigger balls than I thought. Or you really are as good as Jessica Fletcher.
Well, really didn't take any super detecting abilities to outfox a couple of stone 10-year-olds. He had returned his attention to the pot, holding it up into a shaft of sunlight so that the crystals glittered like tiny prisms.
Holy shit! This is SOG Blueberry.
SOG? Sea of Green?
Yep, Sea of Green. They get clones from Holland and grow this shit in blackout rooms with just the right chemicals and a hell of a lot of lights. This is either blueberry or a close cousin. I used to smoke blueberry after every home game when I played in Oakland. It'll make you forget all your aches. Hell, it almost make you forget to breathe. This is what Gnarlene lost?
Part of it. Let me catch you up on Mississippi drug laws, Goat. This little bit, anything less than an ounce, is a misdemeanor for possession with a fine of $100. No problem. Go over an ounce and you can get up to 3 years in parchment. Over a half pound, you're looking at 8 years and $50,000. Over a pound, things really start to get rough.
And Narlene?
I didn't go and weigh this stuff, but I'd say there's well over half a pound. He quit fondling the pot and pushed the tin away from him on the table.
How in the hell did Narlene get messed up with this?
I don't know how, but whoever gave Narlene this pot is the person she's afraid of. And I'd say she's probably got a right to be. I slid a folded piece of paper across the table. This is an address on Gulfport Street, on the north side of the railroad woods. The house is burned completely down, but the address is written in spray paint on the foundation. A ditch runs along the property line there, and the pot is duct-taped to the inside top of the culvert there. The next big rain we have will wash it out into the creek. Now, Goat, I don't know if the cops are really interested in this, but Narlene did call them. Our neighborhood team, Ellis and Barton, came by the store this afternoon. I don't think anyone was following me when I left it there, but with pot like this, there could be a parade of folks in the woods looking for it if the kids talk. And you know that they will talk. Do not go pick this up yourself, and certainly don't let Narlene do it. If you can't get Narlene to tell you who gave it to her, just sit back and let it rain.
Okay, I got you. Now about your finder's fee.
No charge. I was happy to be of help, and I sure don't want Narlene to stay mad at me. I reached over and tapped the tin box in front of him. Besides, it just so happens that I picked up 2 Altoids boxes today. I got back to the store a little before 3 o'clock and found Gojo working a between football games rush. I stood up to the counter beside him and we made short work of the crowd. Gojo headed home to change and catch the second ball game before coming back for his scheduled shift at 6 o'clock. I settled down on the stool behind the register and opened up my PowerBook for the first time that Sunday. Before I could start wading through my email, the iChat icon started bouncing impatiently in the dock. Lurker 76 was my ticket to the easiest money that Speed Investigations could provide day in and day out. He was my finder.
JC?
I'm here. What good news, Lurker?
Linda Vasquez, Bradenton, Florida. Got a phone number and address. Need more?
Not for now. Send what you've got. I'll send money.
Headed your way, JC.
Interested in leg work if we need to physically confirm Vasquez.
Negative. You the detective.
Okay. Don't go ballistic on me. Thought you might like extra money.
Not ballistic. Not paranoid. Not psycho. Not need extra money. Just not my thing. You are gumshoe.
I figured any input from me would just get him more agitated, so I let a message-free minute go by. When he came back, he had regained his lowercase attitude.
Need to bounce up T.D. Williams. Too much interference coming from Ted Williams and million kids named after him. Have to spend some money to continue.
I'll talk to daughter tonight. Think she'll want to go on.
Okay. Out.
He was gone. And I was at least $50 richer. I never could understand why Lurker didn't hang out his own shingle and cut me out of the deal. He often pointed out that I could get most of my missing persons hits from one of the web services for $8 a shot. And of course, anyone with access to a computer and a credit card could do their own thing and cut us both out. Yes, it is a bit of a racket, but the customers are usually satisfied. I charge $100, with a $25 non-refundable deposit up front for a simple locator job. Often the person looking wants me to make initial contact. I charge another $50 for 1 to 5 phone calls. If Lurker has to spend money, we usually go up another $100, but only if Lurker is successful. Lurker is almost always successful. Lurker and I split the proceeds and the expenses. If I have to travel to verify an identity or to contact someone in person, things can start to get expensive. I took care of my 2 missing persons calls, printed Lurker's report, transferred money from my account into his, and emailed Lurker that he was go on the Williams find. The phone rang. I picked it up immediately and hesitated for a split second, trying to remember which greeting to give. Before I could make up my mind, the other person spoke.
Mr. Speed, this is Dr. Landis Grantham. You were recommended to me by a friend who would like to remain anonymous.
The voice was so deep and stilted that I thought it might be someone playing a trick on me, but I decided to play along. Yes?
Well, it seems that I am in need of your services. You see, my wife and I are separated. In fact, we are in the process of getting a divorce. I'm sure you get this kind of thing all the time, Mr. Speed.
Go on, Dr. Grantham.
Well, you see, I'm a professor at the university. This is so awkward. The fact is that Lillian is threatening to make accusations that might very well endanger my career, when in fact It is she who has not been faithful. In short, I need you to find evidence that my wife is having an affair.
I would be happy to help you, Dr. Grantham. I charge $300 per day, plus expenses, and I need a deposit of $500 to get started. Could I meet with you and go over the case?
I'm afraid that won't be possible. You see, Mr. Speed, I believe that my wife already has someone following me, and I wouldn't want to hinder your efforts by tipping her off. I've taken the liberty of sending a young friend to your convenience store with an envelope containing $1,000 as your retainer. If we agree on terms, he will deliver this package within 10 minutes. I have come to know that my wife is planning to travel to New Orleans Tuesday with her lover. I think that this trip might provide you with ample opportunity to produce the needed evidence. Do you think you can take the case, Mr. Speed?
Yes, I think I can. But I do need to get some more information from you.
Yes, of course. I have included in the envelope all pertinent information that I can think of. My wife's name, phone number, address, friends, work number and address, and so on. I must insist that you don't call me at my office or my house, Mr. Speed. I will call this number on occasion to get a progress report and to see if I can be of any further assistance in the case. There is one piece of information in the envelope that might give you pause. You see, Lillian's lover is my own brother Latimer, Dr. Latimer Grantham, the oral surgeon.
When Grantham hung up, I pressed *69 on the phone pad and copied down the phone number with a few notes. By the time I had created a case file and stuffed it into my banged-up briefcase, a stringy-haired, baggy-clothed kid, who looked like he had just lost his skateboard, walked in with my envelope. I signed a receipt for the money, shot a copy of the receipt, and the kid hit the door, picking up speed. It was as advertised. I read carefully through the 9 pages of information, taking more notes as I read. The man was meticulous, and a good writer, but he seemed strangely unattached. Again, I felt like I was an unnecessary middleman. Grantham had not only found out that his wife and his brother were headed to New Orleans for an art show opening, he knew which hotel and which suite they were staying in, and he made a reservation in my name for a room in another hotel that would, quote, afford a good vantage of the suite. The upturn in customer traffic alerted me that the second ball game was over. I checked the clock and saw that my Sunday afternoon had slipped by. It was almost time for Gojo to be back, and Vera would already be home. I dialed our home phone number. Before she could speak, I shouted, "Vera, pull the credit card out of the freezer and light up the grill. I'm bringing home some steaks and a bottle of good Australian red. I've got me a case, baby!"
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at DancingCatStudios.com.